Welcome back to Look Ma, No Hands. I am your host, Laura Max Rose, and I am thrilled to be back here with you today. I am now a mother of three girls, Selma, Violet, and Jolene. I have more questions to ask, more wisdom and knowledge from my incredible guests to share with you this season. I cannot wait to get started. We are just going to dive right in. But first, I want to tell you that one of the themes you will notice in this season is we're no longer sweating the small stuff. We got to let it all go because guess what? Mama has three kids now. She's holding a baby while trying to parent two other little kids, and the stuff that doesn't matter is not going to get done. And guess what I found out when I had a third kid? Way more doesn't matter than I realized. It is possible for way less to get done and for everything to still be okay. For example, I recorded an entire interview yesterday with Megan Burkle of Willow Crowns, one of your favorite guests, one of my favorite guests, and I realized after recording that having purchased my brand new beautiful Joe Rogan-y microphone, it wasn't plugged in properly. So my computer audio is doing all the recording. It's a little bit, it's not exactly as professional sounding as you might be used to hearing on this podcast, but I hope the content makes up for it. And in the future, you can expect a little bit of a smoother sound like what you're listening to right now because my microphone is plugged in. Truly, I do believe the content of our interview more than makes up for it. Megan is a profound guest. I always cherish our conversations, and this one is absolutely no exception. So without any further ado, I'm going to dive right in. I'm going to share our conversation with you and tell you that you have so much to look forward to on this podcast, season two. Here we go. Let's do this.
With your favorite guest on Look Ma, No Hands, Megan Burkle, Willow Crowns. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
I feel like we haven't spoken in ages, and I am thrilled to have you back. I get regular requests to hear about your life and to have you back and to hear your updates. So tell us what's been going on. You have been, well, first of all, let me back up for a minute. For those of you who don't know, or if you're new to this show, Megan is the owner of Willow Crowns, which is a children's boutique and originally a bow shop.
Hair accessories.
A hair accessories boutique for children. And it has been a beloved part of our lives and the lives of so many. And she started off in Houston. And on top of owning her business, she is so fun to follow on social media. She's always giving me tips and tricks that really enhance and improve my day-to-day life living with children and running my household. And I know I'm not the only one because so many other people follow her and feel the same way and come to hear her updates on this podcast. So she's been on many times. And about 2 years ago during the pandemic, you guys relocated to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which was a huge change. So I don't think I've spoken to you in about a year, Megan. What's been going on over there? How are you? How's Willow Crowns? How's Dallas? What's going on?
It's all good. You know, I would say last year was actually kind of a tougher year for me personally. I think I mentally muscled through the first year of the pandemic like everybody did. And then I moved our family, and that took about a year to, I mean, you know, you've relocated in the past few years. Like, it is such a huge undertaking. And so I felt like after 2 years of a lot of stuff last year, I felt like it kind of caught up to me, and I felt like I had to kind of find myself again a little bit last year because mentally so much caught up to me. And so I felt like, I guess like January of this year, I was like, I'm back. And it really caught me off guard because I feel like you hit your mid 30s and you're like, I'm locked in. I am who I am as a person and as a mother. Sorry for the email ding. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute. I'm having a crisis, an identity crisis.
I felt the exact same way relocating because I was in, I mean, I guess like my early, I'm in my mid 30s now, as one would say, but I was in my early 30s relocating here. And I, you just described it perfectly. I felt like I had it down. I understood myself and I had routines and I had places that I loved. And then all of a sudden I picked everything up and I moved it. And I loved how you called it muscling through because that was exactly what I think so many of us were doing. I was just muscling through, and it really does. It catches up to you. And I've always really appreciated your candor when you're having a hard time, because I think it would be really easy for somebody in your position to not discuss that. And I love that you're honest about it. You've actually been honest about something that I really want to discuss, which I notice people ask you about all the time. You mentioned that when the pandemic began, that your husband, you know, you kind of were having a hard time getting out of bed, basically. And your husband was like, all right, what's going on? And so you went to your psychiatrist and you got prescribed Zoloft, and that it was really, really important and really helpful for you. And somebody, you always get asked, I've noticed, are you still on it? What's going on? Give us the Zoloft update. First of all, why do you think people are so curious about that? Because I have my own ideas of why. And tell us about your Zoloft journey.
I think I get asked a lot about it so much because motherhood is the common denominator for, I would say, 95% of the people who follow me on social media, just because of the nature of my business. It's for women and children. And I think motherhood is so hard.
It is so hard.
I think mothering right now in these times is so hard. The past few years, I mean, yes, obviously COVID, like, oh my gosh, mothering during COVID was so difficult. But even now, like, we have as mothers so many concerns for our children that just did not exist when people were mothering 100 years ago.
You have older children than I do. Yes, so you know, tell me a little bit about what the day-to-day is for you as far as what are your concerns? Because my oldest child is 6. So thank God I have not had to deal with like the social media TikTok verse yet. So tell me about that.
My baby is the age of your oldest child. So I am like in a complete, and that has been, you know, you ask like how things have been and what's changed. That has been a huge change. Getting to have a preteen, when the first time I spoke with you, Olivia was like 7 and now she's a preteen. And it's a completely different ballgame mothering. I am not physically tired because I'm not trying to keep someone from drowning in the bathtub or falling down the stairs or getting up in the middle of the night with babies. I am trying to suss out friends and say, are they a good influence on you? Do they bring out the best in who you are? Do I trust their parents for you to be at their home? What are you watching? Is it appropriate? And, you know, you say, mommy, I want to play Minecraft. Well, does Minecraft have a chat feature? And what are the settings on that? And what are they talking about at school? Because I don't know. You're away from me now more than you're with me.
Have you had an experience yet where you've like discovered that your oldest has gotten into something that you weren't aware she even had access to? And like, perhaps it's exposed her to something that you like, that you didn't want her exposed to? Or have you avoided that?
I'm trying to think, because we've had a lot of conversations about internet safety proactively. She's not a super adventurous kid in terms of online stuff. She's like very locked into like art videos and Minecraft, and she, like, her interests are pretty singular right now. So I don't worry about her exploring too much, but we do. I don't think we've caught anything like particularly bad, but we do. I mean, the policing, the monitoring.
It's just, they have so much access to so much.
So much access. Even if you lock it down at home, which I feel conflicted about, because I feel like I have to teach her internet intelligence and internet safety, and that requires showing her how to do that while simultaneously making sure that lesson doesn't include anything that's not age appropriate. So it's like this constant like checking viewing histories and making sure chat features are turned off on certain apps. And it's like this mental load now. It's not a physical fatigue. It's an emotional fatigue. It's a mental fatigue. And
I so hear that. I feel like I kind of have both going on right now. But
and you do, because you have kids, and everyone has the physical and the mental load. Because I was even thinking about this, like, my 6-year-old is in kindergarten. And when my older daughter was in kindergarten, I had a lot of stress about her reading. I was like, when is she going to learn to read? Is she reading first in her class, middle in her class, last in her class? Like, I would have told you at that time, being a mom is so mentally exhausting. I have another child in kindergarten and I'm like, she'll read when she reads. Like, it's going to be fine.
What does it say about me that I have that attitude if this is my first kid and she's in kindergarten? Like,
and I think it's super lucky.
I just, you know what it is, Megan? I think it's having, because I think if she'd been in kindergarten last year, I would have felt that way. And I was so nervous in the anticipation of her learning to read. And I was nervous about myself. And I was nervous about how am I going to make sure she can do this? And this is like the first big thing I have to make sure she learns. And then I had my third kid. And it's like, you cannot, there is no time to worry about those things. Like the time that I had, and I'm like, she's going to get this.
They all do.
Just how it has to be. Yeah.
But at the time I would have told you that is a huge mental load because Now it's not so much just keeping them safe and making sure they don't choke and baby led weaning and all the things. It's like, oh, they're in school now. And this is serious. Well, now I have a kid going to intermediate school in the fall. And so now I'm like elementary school, whatever, like whatever.
You can deal with it. Exactly.
Perspective is just everything. And I think as we have more children and mother for longer and have more experience and become more confident, we gain better perspective on those things. But the fact of the matter is we're all worried about stuff. We all love children so much and want everything to be as good as it can for them that we are mentally taxed. And then we're also all, you know, in relationships. We have friendships, partners, homes that we're trying to manage, careers we're trying to manage that, of course, people want a little help because we are so mentally overloaded. I mean, there's just so much to do and so much to care about. Of course, we want a little help, whether it's therapy or Zoloft or hot yoga or whatever it is that provides you with that assistance so that you don't feel like the everyday aspects of life are so heavy.
So you got that assistance when you got a Zoloft prescription in the beginning of the pandemic. And Megan, it's so funny. I get to tell you this now. I remember you started taking it and I remember thinking, gosh, I'm jealous. How do I get me some of that? And I had had it, you know, because I have had postpartum with like all my kids. And so I was like, oh, I don't know if I need it. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like teetering. And then what ended up happening was when I was having my third, this is really interesting. And I want to disclose here, like, I am not a doctor. This is not medical advice. Please talk to your doctor. But I disclosed to my new doctor here in Colorado, you know, this is my history. I had postpartum depression with my first. I had really, really intense postpartum anxiety with my second. I'm very nervous about this occurring again. And they said, you know, you're two for two. Like there's like no chance. You're not at least going to have the anxiety. Yeah. They weren't as worried about the depression aspect because as I disclosed more, they kind of felt like it was a little bit more situational, which I did too. But the anxiety I had with both, and it was really intense with Violet. And it's really related to not sleeping enough for me. I mean, I cannot handle that. I cannot handle not sleeping. It's so hard. My body just feels like electric about everything. And then what ends up happening after I've had a baby is around like 4 or 5 p.m. I would say every time, like in that newborn window, I'm just like frenetic and I can't calm down. Even if nothing is necessarily happening that's stressful, I'm like, my heart is pounding and it's this physiological thing. So they said, listen, we're pretty certain this is going to happen to you again. And here's what we know. In women who start taking an antidepressant at 36 weeks pregnant, instead of waiting until they've had the baby or waiting until they're already depressed or anxious, by the time they have the baby, the medicine's already active in their body and they get to kind of skip all of that.
Yeah.
And it took me so long to surrender to like taking this medication at 36 weeks, but I did it. And I have to tell you, it was a completely night and day experience having my third kid.
I have that because having a new baby is an amazing thing. It's really hard, but it shouldn't have to be harder than it already is because it is already so hard.
It's already hard. And it was like the hard that I felt like it was supposed to be, but I got to enjoy the stuff that was enjoyable.
Yes,
and like, it was a physical, like, oh my God, like I'm mothering these two children and I've slept for 45 minutes, but like I could handle that. Like to the degree that I felt like I ought to be able to handle it and I could get through my life. And I felt like I was really thriving. And I've actually stayed on it. They were like, you know, we recommend you stay on it for a year. So again, this is like really situational, like whatever works for you. I wasn't comfortable just getting this advice from my OB. So I ended up going to a psychiatrist to talk about this. He had the same advice for me. And so I'm not quite at 1 year yet. And I don't know what I will do after that year is up, but I look back on myself and just like the enormity of my day-to-day anxiety and the fact that I'm still anxious, but it's not like it was.
That's what it is. I think people have this perception that if you get on a medication, you're just going to be like, your head's in a bubble and
it changes your life and you can just do anything. Yes.
No, yeah. I still cry about stuff. I still have arguments with my spouse and my children. I am still anxious about things, but I can get out of bed. And that was where I was. I was not able to get out of bed. And at least now, like, I've been going to therapy for years. I am a huge fan of therapy, but I couldn't even use the techniques I was learning in therapy. It was like, I knew what was on the other side of that door. All those techniques are just open the door,
but you can't even use the techniques.
I couldn't even open the door.
100%. Yes. Like there's no technique for that. There's no technique for like getting out of bed when you can't, right? Or getting through that kind of anxiety.
And at the time, you know, just to give perspective, it was the pandemic. It was May of the pandemic. So it was very fresh. My husband had just decided to leave his job. So I was our sole source of income. He was job hunting. We were on lockdown. I was raising two kids and running my business. It was just
too much.
All of those things needed to happen every day. And so, again, I think why there's this interest in it is because so many of my followers are mothers and women, mothers, we are doing the household heavy lifting. I know people have spouses that are amazingly wonderful and supportive. My husband is there for bedtime most nights, and it is such a help to me. But don't tell me that every house doesn't have a primary parent. Don't tell me that every house doesn't have someone who, regardless of anyone else's intentions, is doing the heaviest of the lifting.
And it can feel so mentally exhausting and rigorous and just like, you know, I think before we have kids, or maybe when we only have one kid or whatever, like after our children go to bed, we have this sort of window for ourselves.
Yes.
And before we have them, that's our whole day basically, but we don't realize it until we've had the kid.
Yes.
But we get this window, and like I found, especially after I'd had my second, and now that I have three, that window is so much smaller. And I spend so much of my day just like pushing uphill. And I know that that's just a season that I'm in right now, but I've got my business and I have my family and I work in the same office with my husband. So I joke that like I'm his marketing director and he's my head of legal. Like I'm doing his marketing. I'm doing mine. I have like all three of them that like my priority is being a good parent to them. And I just got an email from my kid's kindergarten teacher about how I've literally forgotten to bring this thing in since like early February that I didn't even know I was supposed to be bringing in. But like, there's always an email like that, Megan. Like I am always getting an email like that.
I am like, this happens to me. And it's so funny because when I first had my daughter, my oldest daughter, I was very much like, she dresses like this every day and we're going to do this and this. And then for picture day or Western day, like I did not even remember picture day this year.
Thank you.
I think I got 5 or 6 emails about it. But like those emails, whether I'm conscious of it or not, they immediately fall to the bottom of my priority list.
Wait, you didn't remember picture day? Because when I opened this email, like the first thing I saw, because I opened it right before I got on this call, and I was like, Megan would never forget that book bag. Like I would.
Because I don't have just one little girl to take care of anymore.
Yes.
My mornings are like, okay, You wore that sweater yesterday. You cannot wear it today. Let's find something else that you feel comfortable in, because that's now the thing. My kids have their own tastes and opinions. I don't get to exert my control, or I choose not to exert my control over things like outfits, because like I said, I'm trying to be like, and you make sure when you come home with your friend after school, you guys are not online. You guys are not on your tablets. You're outside. It's a beautiful day. Like, those are the battles I have to choose. Not wearing
the fact that my kid is wearing tie-dye leggings today with the 4th of July skirt. Yeah.
100%. And so like my kids' school photos, like I get that email and I'm like, well, I have a customer who's missing an item from an order. That's a priority for me. I have a letter that my commodity flow survey is due for the fourth quarter. That is my priority, not picture day. And I so wanted and was that mom. I wanted to be that mom that like my children always looked just like amazing. And I've given it up. They are going to be fine and I'm going to be fine. And I've got bigger fish to fry than whether you're in your 4th of July skirt and leggings in the middle of
I think what you just said is going to be so liberating for so many people. Because honestly, I'm like, I've gone from like, is your hair done to like, is there hair on your head? Yes. I just like, okay, you have hair on your head. Like, let's get out. Like, I love doing my children's hair. Obviously, we have that connection.
Yes, I do too.
Obviously, I watch all the Willow Crowns hair videos, the tutorials. It's my favorite thing to do. The second it's Saturday morning, it's the beauty salon at my house. And I'm so excited. But I've had to kind of realize, like, okay, is my kid going to have like 22 tardies this year? Or am I going to like get you in your seat? We live an hour away from school. So it's like, it's insane. So I'm like, I'm going to get you in your seat and like your hair is going to be like out of your face. And that's going to be like as good as it gets.
See what you're learning, because that's the point. I mean, just this week, my older daughter has terrible allergies in the spring. Like every year in March, she wakes up with like her eyes like swollen shut. She's just suffering. And I guess it was Monday night. She just couldn't sleep. She just got so little sleep, and she got up in the morning, and I'm like a rule follower. If you tell me that school starts at 7:55, my kids will be there at 7:55. Like I have a compulsion to follow that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I had to make the decision, like, you know what? You've got theater at 8 o'clock this morning. I am a huge fan of the arts. Like, I am so glad my kids have theater.
I know.
As a special. But I also know, here's again, like having older children, she has standardized testing coming up next month. And if you don't pass this standardized test, you don't go to the next grade. And math is really hard for her. And I had to make the decision, I'm going to let you sleep in until 9. I'm going to take your sister to school and yeah, I will come back. Ryan stayed with her so I could drop Izzo off, come back. I was so glad to have the flexibility to do that. But I cared more about her being rested for math.
Yes, 100%.
On time for her specials. And as a rule follower, that's like really uncomfortable. But I'm also, as a mother, that's kind of the mental gymnastics I'm doing all the time. What's the priority? What's the most important thing? What can I do to help you have the best day you can? Being exhausted isn't it.
No, absolutely not.
He must have thanked me 3 or 4 times that morning. Like, thank you, mommy. Thank you so much for letting me sleep in. And she loves theater. She wasn't happy to miss theater, but she needed that rest so badly. And she was so grateful to get it. And I was like, it was just sleep.
And you knew what she needed.
Why can't we just, like, why did I have to struggle with that? So the kid just needed a couple extra hours of sleep and it changed the whole course of her day.
And now the next time you do it, though, I think the decision will be easier. And I also like to ask myself this question. What would I do if this were me? Like, have you realized we make our kids do more than any adult like I've ever met in my life?
I have been thinking about this a lot because my kids don't do sports. My husband and I are not sporty people. So first of all, it's just not in their DNA. And Olivia especially is not interested. She's my artist. She's very into the art.
I feel like you're really lucky. I really struggle with my one child loves sports and I'm like, I can't help you. I don't know how to help you.
I'm so relieved because feel terrible. But one of my girlfriends, I think I posted something on Instagram the other day that was like, oh, the best way to start a Saturday. And it was like just us laying in bed. The dog was there because my kids are old enough now that if they get up on Saturday morning, they grab a yogurt and they turn on Bluey and, you know, they leave me alone. And one of my girlfriends, she goes, oh, so you mean the best way to start the weekend is not 7:30 at the soccer field on Saturday with all three kids? And I was like,
oh, who knew?
That's right. So many of us mothers have to do stuff like that because it's what our children are interested in. And I'm always over here like sneakily grateful that I don't have athletic kids because I don't have to spend my
Honestly, like this past ice hockey season, I almost died. Like when it was, we were in like our last two hockey lessons of the year. They're like 2 a week. And I was like, Ben, I don't think I can, I think I'm going to die. Like, I can't do this anymore. It takes like an hour to get her dressed. It's freezing. It's just like hell. Like, this is what cold hell feels like to me. And then I got my other kid doing ballet and I'm like, okay, I can do this. Like, I've been waiting my whole life for this. The hockey thing. Oh my God.
So I have like, and again, we want to do all the right things for our kids. We want them to have every opportunity. I have a one activity rule.
Because I like this. Tell me more.
Each get one activity because
that is not a lot in the world that we live in. Like, let me just say, and I don't think, like, I think that's a very brave thing to say. Like, I am very curious to hear more about this.
It's taken me a lot of time to get confident with that because I'm like, oh, am I doing this wrong? Like, everyone else's kids are in like two or three activities. I see these moms like running the roads constantly. And I'm like, it's like, I feel like things should be harder. Like, I'm looking for a reason to make my life harder.
But and why?
No, like Olivia's taking a cooking class right now. She loves it.
Amazing. So she's taking that class, but she's not doing any kind of like gymnastics or anything like that.
Nope.
And you're worried that she's not going to be Simone Biles? Because I spend my entire life worrying that if I cancel this gymnastics class that we can barely make it do anyway, that the window for being Simone Biles is going to close. Right.
Right. And so Isabel wants to take up horseback riding, which Olivia used to do. So I was like, fine, you can ride and you can do your cooking class. Olivia used to take an art lesson. Like, one activity a week per child is plenty for me. I don't know about everyone else. When it's 3:45 in the afternoon and I'm finally home for the day with my kids, I really don't want to pack up and leave again.
I want to go home after school.
I just want to stay home.
Oh my God. Staying home after school is the best thing ever. And I can tell my kids are so relieved by it too. So it's like, why are we doing this?
When you said we ask our kids to do more than we do, that was kind of the light bulb moment for me. I was like, my children are in school 40 hours a week. That's a full-time job.
Yeah. And you work from home. Like I work from an office, but it's like practically like working from home because I can choose whether or not I want to be here. Like when I was going to an office 40 hours a week, I was miserable. I'm like, I wanted to get out of that as fast as I could.
I remember being 15 and getting my worker's permit and being able to go work and I got my first summer job and worked my first 40-hour week and thought I was going to die because I'm so tired. And I'm like, my children, their job, and I tell my girls this, your job is school right now. Your job is school. And can you imagine working 40 hours? People do this. People who have to work more than one job. And they will tell you it is just so draining to work.
And then they have to go to another job after school, which is like the extracurriculars. And then they have to come home after that and do homework.
And then that. So I just said, no, I'm not like I'm. If it works for other people, I don't criticize and I don't judge. I know people whose kids, if they missed a soccer practice, would be devastated because they love to play soccer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is their choice. I have decided to stop feeling guilty for limiting my children to one activity each because it's just, you have to do what works for your house and for your family. And that's what works for us. And I think there's a lot of wrong ways to be a parent, but there are a infinite number of right ways to be a parent.
If I've learned anything from this podcast, it's what you just said, that like, I know so many good moms from doing this, like yourself, and they're so different.
Everything differently, as they should, because we are all living in these tiny micro cultures within our own home. And you can't apply any kind of blanket statement to every microculture, every household. It doesn't work.
You 100%. I could not agree with you more. And I think we have to remember that our children were, I really believe this, like our children were given to us for a reason. Like we have what they need.
We do.
And other people don't. And like we can learn from them, but we know what our children need.
And
we're their parents for a reason.
I really had to, over the years, take a step back and think about, okay, what is my job as your parent? Like if I had to break it down on a resume, responsibilities, there's the logistical things, right? Like clean clothing to wear, food on the table, transportation to and from school and activities, blah, blah, blah. I've started being like, is it my job to turn you into some kind of a prodigy? No. Is it my job to make you in my image? No. It's my job to meet you where you're at. It's my job to unconditionally love you for exactly who you are. It is my job to provide a safe space for you, a emotionally safe space for you. It is my job to provide you with boundaries and instill in you that every time you bump up against one of those boundaries, I'm going to address it and it will be from a place of love. Like that, it's not about having the kid that wins the spelling bee. That's not your job as a parent. Your job as a parent is not to have the star basketball player. Your job as a parent is to have a healthy relationship with your child. And what does that look like? It depends.
I don't believe that the cave mothers, okay, were thinking about having star basketball player children. And I do believe, I do have a theory that the whole, like, I have to have a child who's a prodigy thing came from like this 90s parenting of like, we only had TV. We didn't really have internet yet. And those were the children that like, you know, they made a huge deal of on the talk shows and like on the magazines. And it was like, that was your way to be like, to find happiness and fame was like through being a child star. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not normal that we have this like societal pressure for our kids to be that stand out. Like we know as mothers intuitively that that is not what is meant to be prioritized.
And the dawning of the internet, and particularly with social media, is that it has given mothers an opportunity and a platform to be proud of their children in a public way. And of course, we're all proud of our kids. I show, like, you know, I tell everyone Olivia is my little artist. She's incredibly talented. And I share her art on Instagram because I'm really proud of her.
And I mean, her art is her art is unreal.
We get caught up in seeing what other people post, like, oh, my daughter, let's just say, like, just won a gymnastics competition or whatever. It's really easy for us as moms on the other end of that to be like, oh, well, what is my child accomplishing? And that's not on the mom who posts about their child's accomplishment. That's on us and our response to what we take in from social media to say, no, but wait, like, no, that's great for them. Maybe their child is just like so passionate about gymnastics and they can't keep that kid off the mat. And she's proud of her. She should be.
Every time I've ever looked at your child's art, I've always thought, like, I know Megan had, like, Megan wasn't pushing her child.
No, I don't want to do that because I have tried before. You know, oh, you don't want to wear that, do you? Wouldn't you rather wear? No, she doesn't. No, I don't. Like I
want. She does not.
Black sweater every single day, which is what she wants to do. And it is my job as her mother to say, fine, it has to be.
Yeah,
it has to be clean. Not fight with her because she doesn't look the way I wanted her to, or that I think she should. That's not my job. My job is to make sure she's dressed appropriately for the weather and that she's following the dress code and that it jives with our values at home. That's
because, there already is a Megan, right? There is a Megan who's dressed really well.
Me.
And this Megan has great hair and this Megan is organized. And Olivia gets to be Olivia and Isabel gets to be Isabel.
Isn't that the gift you give your children?
Yes.
Freedom to be who they are And it's so hard as mothers. It's so hard. I don't like, it sounds like it should be the easiest thing in the world, but
it's not.
Are flawed people. But I have just really had to like, I'm asking myself 100 times a day, what's my actual job in this situation? What's my actual job? Is my actual job to tell you that violates one of the rules in our home and now there's going to be discipline? Is it
discipline look like in your house?
We lose screen time. That's my kids' currency right now. That's their currency right now.
I so hear that.
One of the things that I like about our house, and again, doesn't work for everyone, we don't have to do a lot of it. And it's not because my kids are angels. They are testing boundaries as they should and as every other kid is doing. But again, I've kind of tailored the way that we do things. I'm trying to set them up to succeed. I'm trying to set them up to not have to push that boundary. We're trying to have these conversations about the internet and what would be a violation before it happens. We are trying to, with Isabel, talk about like, we're having a friend over. They're bringing their sibling. It is kind to include their sibling, even though they're not your friend. If you are not able to do that, here's what that's going to look like. And not worrying about like, okay, is she dressed perfectly for this play date? Which is something I would have done early in my parenting years. It's more about prepping her to be successful during the play date.
I love that. And you know, you were talking earlier about boundaries and like the ways that you are responsible for your children's well-being. Everything you were saying to me was about like filling up your own tank so that in the ways that you're meant to, you can fill up theirs. And you have always striked me as somebody who really has that down. And I love how like playful you make life and motherhood and fun. It's inspired me in so many ways. Like I love it. Can you tell us like a little bit for everyone who doesn't follow you maybe as closely, like tell us a little bit about what that looks like for you, like really filling your own tank each day. Are you still waking up an hour before your children? Yeah. Because I'm not. They said it like I can't. I'd be waking up at 3 a.m. at this point. But so, yeah.
Maybe, but I still do. I will tell you last year, you know, kind of during my lost year, I wasn't. I still get up earlier than them so that I can do, I mean, it's like 5-10 minutes of yoga and coffee and maybe a little Candy Crush just to like.
Honestly, wait, Candy. Oh, Candy Crush, like the game Candy Crush? Oh my God, stop. Is it really that fun? Haven't thought about Candy Crush in 100 years. I used to get like little ads for it all the time. I've never played it.
I just kind of do it in the morning. I do Wordle. I do a little Candy Crush. I just like to wake my brain up. And then,
that's amazing.
You know, life is so heavy on its own. I'm trying not to bring any extra heaviness. I have this like desire for our home to be our family's sanctuary. I want it to be calm. I want it to be safe. You know, my husband has a very high stress drop. I want him to come home and be able to leave work and be here and be with us. I want my kids to come home from school and leave school and be here and be with us. So one of the things that I do to fill my own tank is that, and that allows me to have a smoother morning. I'm not rushed. I'm not trying to get myself ready. At the same time, I'm trying to get them ready. That helps me create that sanctuary space in the morning. It helps my kids get a calm, smooth start to the day. That's a huge priority for me. I've had to, again, knock down, like, we're not going to fight about clothes. And I'm really not even going to fight you on breakfast. If there's a leftover piece of pizza in the fridge and that's what you want for breakfast, okay.
I eat it. Do you know how often I eat a cupcake for breakfast? Like, or a leftover piece of pizza?
And I've always been that person that's like, how is a piece of pizza for breakfast with protein, carbs, and fat different than a breakfast sandwich, which is protein, carbs, and fat? Like, I don't
understand. It's just a label.
The difference. Yeah. So if it gets your belly full before you go out to learn all day, I'm not going to argue with you about that. I will remove every barrier to a smooth morning that I realistically can, because that's a priority for me. I feel like I can provide my children with a smooth morning before they go to school.
I love that. Oh my God. I'm so inspired by what you just said. Thank you.
It's fine. If it makes you feel better, toss a bowl of fruit on the table. But one kid that eats a Carnation instant breakfast every single day, that is her breakfast. Fine.
I love that. I love Carnation instant breakfast.
But you need to have your farm fresh, you know, cage free eggs and your arugula omelet. Nope. Like they're never going to, I already have to fight with them about like, no, it is too hot out for a winter jacket. It's 80 degrees outside.
Yeah. We have the opposite here. You can't wear sandals in the blizzard, but yes, I totally understand. Like those are the important battles.
Why are we fighting?
Can't lose a toe.
or the clothes. Like, it just, I've had to let some of that stuff go. The things that I thought made me a good mom. And I'm actually, I have a better relationship with my kids now that I have let go of so many of that stuff. I'm going to keep it for myself. I like to be organized. I like to be dressed a certain way. I have myself to do that with. I can be my own little doll if I want to, but my kids,
I love that.
They're not my dolls. They're my kids. And so those are the things that I do to take care of me. I will. Last 2 weeks ago was spring break and we had a great spring break. We spent a lot of time together, but by Thursday I really needed out.
You were like done. Totally.
I got a sitter and I went and got my nails done. And I don't care if it sounds frivolous or selfish.
Not at all.
I left for 90 minutes and, you know, paid my teenage babysitter who was thrilled. Now she's got, you know, Starbucks money. And I got to just like take a breath. I love pampering. I love a massage. I love nails. Like that's, I'm a high maintenance kind of girl.
I love that.
That's what I will do. And it's okay to take it because then I've been with my kids all week and I was going to be with them the rest of the day and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And 90 minutes, if that's what it takes, fine.
I think those are the times that I can get into the biggest spiral in my own head when I'm out of my routine, when we're on some kind of break. This is when it always happens. And I'm on day 3 or 4 of having had absolutely no time to myself. So I'm not my best at all. I'm losing my temper. I'm losing my patience. I feel so badly about myself that I forget that the solution isn't continuing to do what I'm doing, but it's getting out of the situation that I'm in, even if it's for 90 minutes, even if it's for an hour and pressing the reset button, that I'm not going to find my answer and find my peace by continuing to dig at myself and do things that make me feel badly about myself and then make myself feel even worse about them and just continue into this.
It's just, it's a very vicious cycle. And it's like, we think that if we are upset with how we're mothering, we just need to try harder. I don't know that that's the, like, I think sometimes, like with anything, like if I'm working on designing a collection and I hit a wall, I stop. I take a step away and I go do something else.
I think you're absolutely right.
It's hard with mothering. Sometimes you can't, it's like if you've got a baby, you can't just like leave the baby on the floor and walk away and be like, all right, well, good luck. I'm going to be, you know, I can't do this for an hour. But if we can find ways to kind of fill our own cup and take that break, whatever that looks like. I mean, I had times where I would be hiding inside my closet while a toddler banged on the other side of the door and cried. Like I needed to be alone for 5 minutes or I was going to pick that kid up and shake them.
You know, we know what we need to do when we need to do it. And that toddler is going to be just fine standing outside the door.
He will still be on the other side of that.
They will still be there. And we are human beings with limitations. And I think we forget that, like, because of what we see on Instagram, like this highlight reel, maybe that we forget we compare ourselves to that. I don't know, but like, oh my God, who would be able to do this full time without needing breaks or losing it? You're totally right. Like I've been in this place recently where like my plate hasn't just been full. It's like, there's like 3 plates and they're stacked on top of each other. And like they're dripping with like sloppy Joe. And like, I'm like, I just have realized recently, like we're going on a trip for spring break. Our spring break is coming up this weekend. We're going on a cruise and there's going to be child programming on that cruise. And I'm just like, I need to like get out of here. Like right now, I need a break from all of this. I need to stop working. I need to stop like parenting 24/7, like all these other things that I'm doing. Like I need a break because better parenting or whatever it is not going to come out of like staying in the same situation that I'm in.
It's not. And I think we feel so much pressure as mothers to do it perfectly all the time, which nobody does anything perfectly all the time. And then we push ourselves into like pretending we enjoy stuff. We don't. I was having this conversation with my mom when she was here a couple of weeks ago. I said, you know what I always hated, like hated, was playing pretend with my kids. Like,
yeah,
mommy, I'll be the teacher and you be the student. Okay, mommy. And I would be like, oh,
I start to space out like 15 seconds in. Yeah.
And my mom loves it. She does it with Isabel and they played school for like 2 hours. And I think the conversation started because I was like, how are you doing this? Like, this looks horrible. Like, I remember when my kids would be like, let's play Magna Tiles. I'd sit down on the floor with them and be like, oh, come on.
Like, that's funny. Like, so I could build a Magna Tile castle for like the rest of my life, but I can't play pretend. Like, that kills me. I can't make a puzzle.
Enjoy children's play. Like, I just,
yeah.
And I'm not a monster. I did it.
No.
But I don't have to like it. And
no, you do not.
I remember my mom said, she goes, oh, Aunt so-and-so felt the same way about one of my cousins. And I remember feeling this relief, like, oh, I'm not broken.
It's not crazy.
Other moms hate pretend play too. But we have
you ever, you have to, I think you might've like aged out of this, like your kids, you don't have kids that are little anymore, but there's this new phenomenon. This woman, her name's Miss Rachel. Have you heard of Miss Rachel? Okay. Miss Rachel's the most amazing human being on the planet. She's like, I feel like she's like the Mr. Rogers of this generation. And like my baby watches Miss Rachel and like, is like obsessed with Miss Rachel. And like my kids love Miss Rachel. But sometimes like I'll look at Miss Rachel and like Miss Rachel, like literally her job that she chose is to play pretend with children on YouTube. And I'm like, why aren't I more like you? Like, you're just like the quintessential mother. And like, I'm failing at this. And like, I'm comparing myself to Miss Rachel. And like, yeah.
But you're putting, and like we all do, you're thinking that equals good mothering. That's good playing pretend. And
sure,
it's something mothers get asked to do a lot. And we do it, even though we hate it, but it sucks my cup dry. I have nothing left. And it's I will sit there and I will draw with you. I will talk to you. I will listen to all your warrior cats, mythology, storylines, and whatever that you're
totally reading.
5 minutes of pretend play. I am wrecked. I got nothing left.
You're done.
I need like a cocktail. Like, I just cannot do it. And I felt like that was like a quintessential part of motherhood that I was missing and failing at. But again, I come back to like, what's my actual job here? My job is to provide you with opportunities for play. I've done that. I hated it, but I've done it. And now I'm going to go call someone else and see if their kid wants to come play with you. So I don't have to do this anymore.
I don't have to provide this opportunity anymore. Exactly.
Providing it. My job is to provide you with fun play. I've done that. However that looks like. My job is to keep you safe, loved, respected, teach you manners, teach you people's boundaries. I'm still doing all those things. Just because I hate pretend play, I'm a different kind of mom, but I'm not a bad mom.
Not at all.
And I think people have to hear that. And I know there are people out there that are going to be like, but I love pretend play. How can she not like pretend play? Well, do you like Brussels sprouts? I don't
exactly
like Brussels sprouts, but I love asparagus. Like, we all like different things. Mothering and the parts of mothering, they're no different, but we have this social pressure to do all the things and do them right and love all of them.
And it goes back to exactly what you were saying before, that there are so many ways to be a good mother.
There are a few ways to do it wrong. Don't get me wrong, but there's a million ways to do it right. And it depends on your child.
Here's a fun question. What are some of the ways that people get it wrong that are the hardest for you when you see them?
I'm really in this place, and I mentioned it earlier, of meeting my children where they're at.
Yeah.
I struggle when I see people forcing their kids into things, or whether it's outfits or sports or activities or whatever, that like the kid clearly hates.
That they don't want to be doing. Yeah.
Again, your children are not a surrogate for you. They are their own unique person. And when I see people not able to acknowledge their children, I see it in things like, this is such a loaded, oh, I'm going to get raked over the coals for this one. Bedroom decor.
Bedroom decor. Continue.
I follow a lot of influencers.
Yeah.
I,
oh, the way that they decorate their children's bedrooms.
I'm like, maybe those kids like it that way, but maybe that kid was also like begging for a Bluey bedspread because they love Bluey and you just couldn't meet them where they were at.
Can I just tell you that I watch in horror, like, and you live there, actually. You maybe like are more close to this phenomenon, but like the Dallas-Fort Worth influencer culture, like these influencer mom influencers that I used to follow like 5 years ago, and they shared really cute stuff and like crafts, and like now they all have like 1.5 million followers, and like their entire lives are basically on camera, and like I'm watching them with like 5-6 children, and these children are completely a part of like their business growing model, and I'm like horrified. Like horrified. Like that's probably my answer to the question.
Yes, but it's like letting your kids be kids. Please let them kids. Like, and maybe bedroom decor is not the best example, but like t-shirts. Olivia went through this phase where everything was flip sequins. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Sure. Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. 100%.
These are so tacky and awful. I would never buy them because it doesn't look good on social, or it doesn't fit my aesthetic. It's not about me and my aesthetic. It's about this kid loves a sequin t-shirt. Let her wear a sequin t-shirt.
Let her wear a sequin t-shirt. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, what does it really hurt? And I have been so fortunate, like my friends here,
they
get that. They all have beautiful homes. They all have gorgeous lives. They're all lovely women, and their kids, I've seen their kids come over and they're like, the hair is what it is today.
It's just what it is. Yeah. It's just like, I totally, like their home is theirs. Right. But their kid is not.
Their kid, they are letting their children be children. I had, a girlfriend who her daughter was at Primrose in a different class, but at Primrose with my daughter. And at Primrose, you have to wear a uniform for preschool. But she was like 1 year younger, so she hadn't hit uniforms yet. And my friend has like a very specific aesthetic. She has a beautiful home. She's so beautiful. And her kids have beautiful things, but there would be days where her child like would not get in the car. And she was like, fine, wear whatever you want. I don't care. Like, yes, she has this closet full of gorgeous dresses for her. But like, if her daughter wanted to leave the house in like rain boots and a tutu and like a college football hair clip.
Yeah. Fine. Okay. Love it.
And I love that. Like, I think we all want our lot. Like, I think it's human nature to pursue the beauty. We want our homes to look nice. We want ourselves to look nice, but we can't push that on our kids. They deserve to be kids. They deserve to have some autonomy as they get older, because there's going to be a lot of things they don't get to decide.
That is true.
To how do I keep my cup from getting drained constantly? I'm not picking the battles that aren't at the end of the day really important. And yes, that means that Olivia, probably her teachers are like, why does this child wear the exact same outfit every day? Are things okay at home? I can't worry about it. I told her if you want to wear it, it has to be clean. She learned how to do laundry. She washes it every night.
Well, your teacher didn't actually ask you that. You're just worried that they. Okay. I was like, oh my God, you're kidding. No. Okay. I'm like, what?
But I think, like, again, teachers know kids. They know kids are weird.
They know. They know how kids are. Exactly.
Kids are really weird.
And I want to take this opportunity to say, like, if anybody that you're following on Instagram has like perfectly matched children and there's like five of them, like there's probably something going on. Like those kids are not choosing to coordinate.
No. And like Instagram is for sure a highlight reel. I think
for sure.
Like,
yeah.
It's become talked about a lot more now, but like social media is 100% a highlight reel. I am guilty of it. Like everybody, I'm showing.
It can be fun. It's fun to show what you love.
And like, if I
don't want you to see me crying in my bed because like I've been awake for 5 days and like I'm having, I'm on TV. I don't want everyone to see that. Right.
I do not need people to watch me go down. I've been on a deep dive with, behavior experts, like body language experts, watching YouTube videos of them analyzing celebrities. Nobody needs to see me doing that. That's the funniest thing.
Like Meghan and Harry.
Yes.
What are they saying about Meghan and Harry?
They think he's got a lot of anger. And okay. I think that's legitimate. And this one particular group I've been listening to, they are not particularly, they don't feel she's always very genuine.
Why is it that like I watched the Meghan and Harry documentary, which you've definitely seen, right? Like the, Okay. I watched it. And like, when I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, like we have them all wrong. Like this woman that she reminds me, she's just so wonderful. And like, Then I stopped watching it and I went right back to like how I feel about her, which is not that way. And I just, it's something, it's like, I have this feeling and I cannot, the documentary sold me on another feeling, but then it went away right away when I was done watching. Do you know what I mean?
They talked about in this group of like, it's a panel, it's four gentlemen. They are like former army interrogators.
Oh my God, this is fascinating.
One of these guys trains G7 leaders on how to project confidence. So these guys are like pretty impressive and they can pick up on the things that might give us a vibe, but we don't know why. They put words to why you get that vibe. And it is fascinating to be like, when someone looks up like this, they're literally searching through their memory. They're filing through their memory. That's what that means. If they put a hand over, like, this is a protective gesture. You're protecting yourself. Like, maybe if you look down and to the left, that is an indicator of being disingenuous. And
so what were they gathering about Megan from these?
Feel like she did a lot of what they call, it was lip clasps or something, but like she would clench her lips and they said, that's withholding. I don't know if she's telling the truth or not the truth, but there's something else she isn't saying. And I have always gotten that
impression from her.
They felt like she did that a lot, or like just the way people switch back and forth to past and present tense. Like he was talking about redriving the route his mother was on when she died. And he started talking about doing that in the present tense. And they said, this is still so fresh for him. This is so raw. He's not saying I drove through the tunnel. He goes, I'm driving through the tunnel and I want to go the same speed she was going. And they're like, he's talking in present tense. It's so fresh. It's still like so raw and painful for him, which of course it is. But it really like, it's been fascinating to me, but nobody wants to see me working in my office, just watching that in the background all day. They don't care.
But I want to hear your findings though. Let's just be clear about that. And you talked about getting dragged through the coals. Like I'm going to get dragged through the coals for this, but like, this was actually my husband's ops. Well, I don't want to attribute it to him because I might get it wrong. So he said something like this, but I now believe it. And it helped me see it. I was trying to understand like why I feel about her the way that I do. And he was like, have you ever heard her talk about his experiences with any level of like compassion or like kind of feeling like he was struggling? Or is she always talking about hers? Because this man has been through like so much. But whenever like the entire documentary was about like what happened to her, not once did we stop and discuss like the difficulty. I mean, it's not like he didn't experience anything negative. He literally completely divorced his entire family. Like,
so what I found interesting, this behavior panel. So I have struggled ever since she said in their engagement interview, I didn't Google him. So I struggle ever since that. I'm everything is with a grain of salt because we all Google everything. Like your eye twitches. Like, am I dying? My eye is twitching. Like we Google absolutely everything in this generation. But they said what was so fascinating is like he basically, without realizing it, he always wanted to save his mother. He's saving her. She's a surrogate.
100%. I have always thought that.
And he was prepared to do this. So I always disagree when people are like, she forced him. I don't think so. I think he was ready. He was looking for someone to save and he was ready at the chance to save her. I think he wanted to hold on to some of the cool stuff, but I think this really does jive with his like lifelong psychological need, subconscious need to save.
Save somebody. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Totally. Okay. So, I think you're wrong though, that like people wouldn't be interested in this because this for me has felt like one of the most fascinating elements of our conversation. And there have been a lot of fascinating ones, but.
And I'm going to just like, I can tell you, I am watching my kids now like a hawk. I'm watching their body language, which as a mother, I think we're pretty tuned into.
Yeah, totally.
We tune into our children's body language. Again, they coined this term microculture. Our families are microcultures that nobody else can really ever truly understand because they're never truly a part of it. And that was the other thing. They're like, she probably had a hard time fitting in because talk about a microculture. Like that is a whole nother level. Of course it was hard to fit into that.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
And so, but that has really opened up for me. Like, oh my gosh, my family is a microculture. I don't go to other people's cultures and tell them you're doing this wrong. I don't go to Spain and say, hey, stop taking siestas. Like,
yeah.
I don't go to France and say, hey, stop drinking wine for lunch. I'm more like, that sounds like a good idea.
Let's all do that together.
We don't go to other cultures and tell people how they should do it, or we shouldn't be doing that. So why are we doing that within our own cultures, our own families? We got to let people parent the way they parent.
Amen, sister. I love it.
For you.
I always learn so much when we talk, and I have been so refreshed and invigorated by this conversation. And I really hope that I do believe it will do the same for everyone who listens to it. Megan, thank you so much.
I raked over the coals for criticizing influencer bedroom decor.
and Meghan Markle. It's so funny. You're Meghan Markle. And so my husband like gets your two names confused, and he will be like, you're interviewing Meghan Markle today. And I'm like, well, I'm not there yet in my career, but I am interviewing Meghan Markle.
So she'll have you on Types podcast one of these days.
Exactly. Right. So, well, she'll let me on after this conversation. But it was so wonderful having you, Meghan. Thank you so, so much. You guys have been listening to Look Ma, No Hands. I am so thrilled to welcome you to this second season. We're going to have so much fun. It's just beginning. And what an amazing way to get it started. I look forward to joining you all again next time.